Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
There's been one demand, and that's holding up that Lombardi trophy, period. That's all I care about, is holding that trophy up and holding that trophy up here.
The prime thing is you have to win. You have to win. Otherwise, you can't be a success in professional football.
You're listening to The State of the Nation with Jimmy Durkin, Vic Tafer, Tashawn Reed, and Ted Nguyen on the Athletic Podcast Network.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to a post-game episode of State of the Nation here on the Athletic Podcast Network. I am Jimmy Durkin, joined, as always, by Vic Tafer, Tashawn Reed, and Ted Nguyen. And what can you say? The largest blown lead in franchise history. 20-0 at halftime. The Raiders lose. 29-23 in overtime. They give up a touchdown and a two-point conversion on the final play of the game. No time left. That was the second touchdown and two-point conversion the Cardinals had in the fourth quarter. And then Hunter Renfrow fumbles twice in a three-play span, the second of which is returned by Byron Murphy for a touchdown. And he almost, DeSean Jackson did. He almost let go of that ball a little bit too early, but it was a walk-off fumble return for a touchdown. And the Raiders are 0-2. It's hard to understate the magnitude of how disappointing this loss is. It was a pretty crushing one.
You talked about how they've had so many horrible, soul crushing losses over the years, and this is the latest one. But to me, this one is not worse, but just really bad, because the Cardinals clearly did not have interest in winning this game early on. They were getting dominated, and to me, it looks like they were ready to check out. Like, even they came back after halftime, that first possession, like, what are we doing here? Let's hop on the bus, let's get some food. So they give the Raiders the ball back, and then the Raiders have three and out. And then it was this long, kind of boring, I guess we'll score kind of deal. And, hey, we're actually maybe in this game. And then all of a sudden, Kyle Murray's playing tag, and guys can't get him. But to me, the Cardinals clearly were ready to lose. They were ready to bow out, and the Raiders gave them every possible chance to get back in the game. And then everything had to happen a certain way to lose the game. It's nuts. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's a cliche, but it's really a tale of two halves. Because that first half, I mean, I was thinking as we were watching it, like, it's the best first half of Raiders football I've seen since I got on the beat. And looking it up, it was their best first half performance since 2015.
You looked it up. You jinxed them. See, that was it.
This seems unprecedented. They're playing excellent. It's like everything was playing out like we thought it was going to play out during the season or during the week. We all predicted this to be a pretty comfortable win for the Raiders, and all the reasons were showing up. The pass rush was going early. The offense was more balanced. They were taking advantage of them both in the pass game and the run game. And in the second half, just everything fell apart, and it wasn't like, the Cardinals suddenly had this explosion or the Raiders started turning the ball over like crazy. It was just a really slow, methodical comeback. And every step along the way, it just seemed like it was destined for the Raiders to blow that lead somehow. I mean, the Cardinals' first two-point conversion with Kyler Murray running around, it seemed like a play out of Madden. Your quarterback just running back and forth for 30 seconds and then somehow ends up converting it. Once that happened, it was like, all right, it seems like some things are amiss here for the Raiders, but some weird play calling in the second half. It was like they were strangely conservative without burning any clock. Like, usually, if they just handed the ball off a few times and it's like, oh, they're running on first down, running on second down and throwing and be like, oh, you're complaining about that. No, they were just throwing a bunch of short passes that didn't go anywhere and punting the ball very quickly without really taking any time off the clock. And so it was a weird, the offensive play calling, last week it was kind of reversed. They started off slow and got going in the second half. This week they started off fast and tapered off in the second half. And so it just seems like an inconsistent team, I think, is the overall message to this point. And that's played out in the first two games. It's only two games, but it seems pretty clear there's going to be a trade of this team at least early on in the season.
Yeah, to me it seemed like in the first half the Cardinals played the opposite game plan as they played last week against the Chiefs. They blitzed a lot. They played a lot of man coverage and they got blown out. And I think against the Raiders, they try to play a lot of soft zone, give a lot of cushion to these receivers. And Carr was able to just pick them apart, throwing right in front of them. And the run game was working pretty well in the first half too. And in the second half, you know, after a first down run, if it didn't go for much, they would start going to the passing game. It just didn't look like Carr was very comfortable. I think they played a little bit tighter on the Raiders. They brought a little bit more pressure. And it does not look like Carr was comfortable with what he was seeing or, you know, his reads. He did not throw with anticipation. There's a pass where Renfrow stopped and Carr was just like staring at him. It looked like he didn't know which way Renfrow was going to break. And then he missed that pass on second down, which led to a third and long and then a stop. So he didn't look comfortable in the second half. And some of that has to do with play calling. Like, you have to find a way to get your number one receiver the ball. Some of that just looked like Carr does not look like he knows what he's doing quite yet in his offense on every snap.
Vic, I kind of wonder, you know, you wrote about it on Saturday. With this offense right now, Derek Carr is doing what Josh McDaniels wants him to do. Some of these, there are plays where it is a predetermined read. You're going and you're throwing it to that play. That's not where Derek Carr has typically succeeded in the past. He's succeeded in the past with his ability to go up to the line of scrimmage, be able to make adjustments and be able to read plays. Does this kind of concern you that this way that Josh McDaniels is kind of forcing Derek Carr into this rigid, you are going to do only what I tell you to do?
I think definitely it's growing pains. I'm sure both guys are going to have to learn to adjust to each other. And I think, like, in the past, in a game like today, they're starting to, you know, bog down a little bit in offense. Derek Carr would throw the ball, you know, three straight times to Adams or three straight times to Crabtree. He'd go to his guy who, you know, Renfrow maybe at times last year. He'd find a guy who he knew where he'd be and force him the ball. And sometimes it's a good result. Sometimes it's good to force guys the ball. I think that today was a case where, in that first half, I don't watch the telecast, I'm at the game, but I'm sure they must have graphics like, oh, the Raiders are spreading the ball around. They got three to Hollins. They got Renfrow going. And they don't even need Adams. Adams only has two catches, and they're on fire. But that second half, you know, the guy has no catches. So I'm sure the whole graphic is reversed. Like, hey, what happened to Devontae Adams? The guy, you know, the new star of the franchise, the face of the franchise, and the guy who I'm sure wanted the ball with the game on the line. His grandparents watched him the first time of his life, and I know he was pissed off. He left in a huff when the game was over. So I just, to me, you know, they all have to work together. I'm sure that it's, like I said, growing pains. But at some point, Devontae and Derek have to have, like, some more, I won't say input, but there has to be a point where, okay, this is our guy. Let's go to our guy and let's win this game, because you can't cover it. That's the thing with Devontae. You can't cover me. Like, you can do A, B, and C, and you can't get me. So in this case, there was no A, B, and C. It just was nothing. So to me, that's the biggest concern, is like they never went back to what they do well, which you would think a good play caller would do.
You guys were there at the game, but we couldn't see from a TV copy, but there was a pass in overtime to Devontae Adams. I think it was a deep pass where the pass was almost intercepted. Was Adams wide? It looked like he was wide open on that one. A car just threw really far behind him.
Yeah, it was behind him. I'm not sure if it was due to pressure or what, but definitely he had a step on the guy. The guy, the DB was behind him. And then the pass was behind him, so DB was able to step up to the ball behind Devontae. But definitely the ball, if it was ahead of him, then it would be a big play for sure.
It looked like it might have been some kind of miscommunication, because Adams looked like kind of confused. Like, he didn't even really make a play on the ball, you know, when it was thrown behind him. So maybe Carr thought he was going one way and he went the other way, or maybe it's just a bad throw. We don't know, but definitely looked like some kind of miscommunication was going on there.
If Carr does hit Adams in that situation, I think it's okay for Adams to have some low target games, because part of the appeal of his offense is that you don't have to force him targets, because you have, you know, Waller, who's one of the top guys at his position, and Renfrow is like one of the top receivers slot receivers in the league. So, I mean, if you hit that big play to Adams and all of a sudden, you know, he makes that big play in a big impact moment, does that sort of alleviate the fact that, you know, you're not force feeding Adams the, you know, the way that they did in the first game?
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to force it to him, but I don't think you have to force it to him to get him more targets. I think he has 7 targets in this game. I think there's ways you can scheme up even some easy targets like the Packers used to do, if it's quick screens or slants or shorter passes. If I have to rewatch the game, but I'm not sure if they were providing extra safety help on his side or anything of that nature. But
I think there's way help.
Yeah, I think you can get him some more targets than what he had and some more catches without it being, you know, you don't have to do 17, but, you know, probably more than they did today. Especially with this Cardinals secondary, I don't think there's any world beaters in that secondary, so I'm pretty sure there were opportunities for him to get loose back there.
Yeah, I mean, in a 7-target game, I mean, 7 targets isn't terrible, but I think the quality of the targets wasn't great,
yeah,
right?
I agree.
You know, I mean, especially in the second, I mean, target him once over the final 2 quarters, and we know they didn't have the ball for very many plays in the 3rd and 4th quarter. You know, they did target him twice in overtime, but only one target over the final 2 quarters. I just don't think the quality was there. And I mean, I don't think that the hand-wringing is necessarily over the number of targets. It's more the fact that, like, he's a really freaking good receiver, and you get the ball in his hands, he helps you win games, and you can draw penalties, all that kind of thing. And yeah, it's just it's pretty mind-boggling that I don't think we expected a game like this, you know, especially against a team like this.
I think because Josh Jacobs is running the ball well enough, and you got Waller, Renfro, Adams, you know, even Moreau was a factor today. O-line's not playing bad. O-line's doing okay, you know, even without Andre James, and you know, so there's no reason for your offense to fall off. You know, there's no reason to have 3 points in the second half. All those things are, if you have Josh Jacobs getting 4 yards a carry, who blocked well today, I thought he played pretty well, set the tone early. And at times you kind of, I just thought, I think the word I used was erratic in my story. I think Josh McDaniels kind of didn't know what he wanted to do. And at times I thought he was always kind of a little off rhythm. I think there were times where, like in that one possession in the early 4th quarter, they're up 16 points, they have the ball, they throw 3 short passes, all incomplete. Takes up 9 seconds off the clock when I think you have to run the ball at least one of those plays to get some time off the clock. And there are other times where I just thought it wasn't in sync. And I thought that's him and Derek, or it's him just kind of like and it mismatches with the Cardinals he was trying to exploit. But all I heard about was this guy is a great, you know, guy who creates mismatches. And so far, it's the first 2 games, it's kind of been a little hit and miss.
It seems like they were overthinking it offensively in the second half. It was almost like trying to do the opposite of what you would expect them to do in certain situations. Like, I think they're already probably, oh, they're expecting us to run the ball, so let's just throw a quick pass instead. And then you get into a 2nd and 10 and you're like, oh, well, you know, we don't want to just punt on the drive. Let's stay aggressive, go for the pass. Because, you know, it's one of those things where if a team, you know, runs too much, then the fans are like, oh, why didn't you just stay aggressive and keep your foot on their neck? And if you don't run, and it's like, oh, why didn't you chew the clock? So you're kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't a little bit in those situations. But I think in general, they just got a little bit too cute in those situations and should have went with the conventional wisdom and tried to chew some more clock off. Because, I mean, as we saw going down to the wire, the Cardinals needed every one of those seconds that they have. And so even if they ran the ball, even if it didn't go anywhere, if they ran the ball once on that possession, maybe the Cardinals don't have enough time at the end to get that touchdown they needed.
And it's not even only about running time off the clock. It's the fact that your defense was on the field for so damn long in that second half. I mean, you look at you know, the Cardinals' first drive of the second half, they don't score. They turn the ball over on downs, but they go 9 plays, 64 yards. Then the next drive, it's a 9 play, 59-yard drive, get the touchdown. Then it's the 18 play, 65-yard drive, obviously, that leads to the touchdown to end the game. The Cardinals, they only had 3 possessions in the second half. I mean, that's how much they were possessing the ball. So, like, those few times that the Raiders had the ball, I mean, it kind of owed it to their defense to give those guys a little bit of a breather. And so I think that's one of the reasons why we're not here sitting ripping the Raiders defense that much for letting the Cardinals come back on them. And you know, obviously, I mean, you look at some of the plays that Kyler Murray made. I mean, 20.8 seconds he scrambled around on that 2-point conversion, ran 84.9 yards all over the field, according to Next Gen Stats. But I think some of that is understandable just based on the fact that those guys were just out there for way too long and getting really gassed. And I mean, we saw, you know, on some of those big plays Kyler Murray made, Max Crosby was really close to getting to him and just couldn't get to him.
He had him in his arms.
It was another pretty
quiet.
Yeah, had him in his arms.
That 4th and 4, he had him.
I will say it was a pretty quiet day again from Chandler Jones. Jones. We all kind of thought that he would show up against his former team, and he was pretty quiet.
Yeah, I don't have too many critiques for the defense. I mean, they were playing without three starters, linebacker Denzel Perryman, cornerback Anthony Averett, and then safety Trayvon Merrick. And, you know, the Cardinals had some players out as well, but, you know, that stuff does matter. But I do think two areas where they kind of dropped the ball towards the end of the game was they had some opportunities to get off the field. I mean, the Cardinals didn't do well on third down really the whole game, but they had three fourth down conversions in the second half. You just got to get off the field. You know, some of those plays where they could have got a stop and they just didn't make a play. And then in terms of their pass rush, and we talked about this last week, it's not so much the sacks because they pressured Justin Herbert a lot last week. And I'm sure, you know, we don't have their pressure numbers yet, but they probably pressured Kyler Murray a good amount, but they didn't do a good job of containing him in the pocket. You know, he was able to, you know, whether it was him actually running or just extending and then throwing the ball, you know, he really hurt them in that area. And that's two straight weeks where they've kind of faltered. And so those were, even, you know, with the injuries and the defense making some plays, especially early on in the first half, I think those are two areas where they need to shore things up moving forward.
Do you guys think that they changed their defensive plan at all when they got the big lead? It seemed like they had more pass rush early on, and I thought they were a little less aggressive. And I'm not sure if that's just the way the game was going, but I wonder if, I don't want to say a prevent defense, but it seemed like they were more on their heels in the third quarter and in the fourth quarter. Kind of, I just thought they weren't forcing the action defensively as they were the first half.
I think they did play softer. I think they did play a little softer coverage and gave up some stuff underneath. But my criticism of the defense would be when they got into the red zone, and I know Patrick Graham likes rushing three. That's part of his scheme. But, like, and I think the theory is you're rushing three, but you have a bunch of zone eyes on Murray in case he runs. But then when he's running around for 20 seconds, he causes so much chaos that everybody's out of position. So it doesn't matter, you know, if you have eyes on him, everybody's out of position. And, you know, that clearly became a factor. And then, okay, if that happens once or twice, fine. But, like, they kept on playing so much too high in the red zone and just rushing three or four, and you couldn't contain them rushing three or four. So I was expecting, like, to see maybe a heavy blitz and just play man and take your chances playing man. Because if you send more defenders out at him, there's less rushing lanes and less time for him to, you know, run around and go in circles and stuff. So that was my criticism of the play calling. It did get conservative, and I thought he should have turned up the aggression when it became clear that they weren't going to contain him with a three-man rush.
Yeah, I think in the first half, they typically, if I remember correctly, on third down, if it was obvious passing situations, you would see them kind of go to more of those dime looks with a third safety or play really far off the line of scrimmage. So I don't think that was something – it maybe wasn't unique to the second half, but I do agree that once, you know, you see him starting to figure that out, because I talked to Nate Hobbs a little bit in the locker room, and he was saying, you know, he felt like it was more about the Cardinals, you know, sort of reacting to what the Raiders game plan was. They tried to just translate what they did in the first half to the second half, and the Cardinals were the team that made adjustments. But once the Cardinals adjusted, the Raiders just kept doing what they were doing. And I think that's what you're kind of speaking to is, and it is surprising for Patrick Graham, because he's usually pretty flexible in game and willing to change fronts, change coverages, mix things up. They kind of played it safe. Another cliche, they kind of played not to lose in this one. Softer coverages, safe coverages, being conservative on offense without running the football much. You know, they had a nice cushion there, obviously, 3-score lead, but it wasn't an insurmountable cushion or anything of that nature. And so, especially once it started to become a game and it was clear that they were kind of in the danger zone, you know, you would have liked to see some more adjustments from the coaching staff.
Well, we also have to give credit to Kyler Murray, because he made some amazing plays. Like, some of those plays were by the skin of his teeth, you know, like breaking away from Max Crosby on 4th and 4, and then that touchdown pass in the back of the end zone with, like, you know, barely any space to make it. So credit to him. You know, like, we're criticizing play calling, but, I mean, he made some amazing plays in that second half.
We'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
AJ Green was letting him down, man. AJ Green drops that touchdown pass. He dropped that other one. I mean, I know Raider fans are going to point to, you know, did he hang on to that 2-point conversion? They kept showing a replay on TV that, was there a bobble? But like the replay was super blurry. I mean, I hope that the actual replay had a better view. And I know, you know, the other Raider fans are going to point to, with the holding call on Roger Teamer that seemed pretty soft. But like, this is one of those games where like, you can complain about a holding call or whatever you want. The way the Raiders spectacularly blew this, you can't blame this on maybe a bad holding call.
It came down to the last play of the game. So I didn't make one more play on offense or defense and they win the game. It really came down to the last play and all those, to me, the glaring, mistakes and lost chances of the offense in the third and fourth quarter. Just one better play call, one catch, one better pass, and they win that game. And it's a whole different scenario because I think at some point it's going to be hard. I mean, that's early. I mean, everyone's confident. They have a good team, but there's got to be some doubt. There's got to be some doubt. Like, are we doing the right things? We're 0-2. This is not what we thought was going to happen. And you got three really tough games coming up. So all of a sudden, it's a crucial time for this team.
If Renfro hangs on to that ball, they most likely win that game. You know, it's second down. If he hangs onto that ball and you're already at field goal range.
Did he gain the yards that play?
He did.
He gained, I think, one.
Yeah, he would have been at the Cardinals 38.
It would have been third and nine at the 38.
38, that's makeable. That's makeable.
When you get first down at the 39, like you get Moreau gets the ball back in the fumble recovery, why not just run Josh three times and give Dylan Carlson's been incredible. And at home, I would run Josh three times. And which half short do you want? Okay, boom.
I get not running it three times just because, like, since
at least run
it
once.
Yeah, run it once. But like, I get not like settling for the long field goal because if you miss it, obviously, then the Cardinals have great field position and your defense is starting to break down. But Renfro on that play, that was his second fumble that drive. It looked like on that play he got. Because he obviously got evaluated for a concussion. Looked like he had some kind of contact to his helmet. So we'll see on that moving forward. It's too early to panic, but like Derek Carr was after the game, he's kind of already bringing out the like, I believe in this team speech that we usually get out of him. Like
you always got to get at least one or two.
Yeah, but
here.
It's like, damn, I don't think they expected that to happen after week two. You know what I mean? Like maybe like halfway through the season, but week two is a little early for that one.
Maybe after like a cheat, you lose to the Chiefs, one of those blowout losses to the Chiefs. That's when those come out usually.
I wasn't in there. I went straight to the locker room. I didn't go there to put in for Derek, but didn't he say at some point, we're not crappy? I think he said, we're not crappy. And
no, he was like, this crap isn't over. We feel crappy right now, but that kind of thing. They're saying we're gonna figure it out, all that kind of stuff. The Derek Carrisms that we get at least once a year, which what do you want them to say? Yeah, we suck, but it feels a little early for that to be, because I didn't really ask him to say anything along those lines. So
I'll read the full quote. He's like, me, I'm optimistic. This crap ain't over. We feel crappy right now, but we are still a good football team. And so we're making sure we keep that mindset, not, oh no, it's over.
Yeah, who said they weren't good? I mean, to me.
I just asked him, like, what goes into improving during.
No, come on, Deshaun, you went up there. It's like, so, well, why do you suck? That was your question, right? So, I mean, where did they go from there? 0-2 is historically not been easy to recover. And like, in a 17 game season, 0-2 should not sound like something that, is all that bad. But, You know, in the last three seasons, no team that's started 0-2 has made the playoffs. And we know the AFC West is going to be really hard. I think we all had skepticism about the Broncos going into the season anyway. And through 2 weeks, it actually looks like the Broncos may have downgraded at head coach when they got rid of Vic Fangio. But I mean, between the Chiefs and the Chargers, it's going to be a tough division. So I think that's the biggest fear is at 0-2. If you were 0-2 in the NFC, I probably feel fine. The NFC is a much weaker division, but 0-2 in the AFC feels like it could be pretty tough to come back from.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they play the Titans next week on the road, but I mean, the Titans just lost to the Giants, and they're probably going to get throttled by the Bills tomorrow, I would expect. So they're probably also going to be 0-2 going into that game.
Bengals are already 0-2.
Yeah, so I think it's feasible to beat the Titans, and the Broncos seem to suck. So, like, you know, they could be 2-2 after the next 2 weeks, and everybody feels fine. But
I don't know if the Broncos suck.
I think they might suck. I mean, they lost to the Seahawks and then, like, almost lost to the Texans.
Super Bowl.
They almost lost to the Seahawks and the Texans. It was, like, 2 of the 5 worst teams.
They needed their fans to count down the play clock for them just so they can get a damn playoff.
Don't get me wrong, like, they can still beat the Raiders if, like, anything can happen, obviously, as today's show, but, like, their next two opponents aren't, like, some juggernauts, you know what I mean? Like, I think it's pretty beatable. They're pretty beatable, but if they lose to the Titans and fall to 0-3, then they might be cooked. I know we said this last year at a certain point, and they made the playoffs and made us all look stupid, but if they lose to the Titans, I probably won't say the season's over, but, like, I don't know. It might be very close to being there.
They have to be 2-2 by the time they get to play the Kansas City Chiefs in Week 5.
Yeah, that's on the road, too. That's on the road, too.
They have to be
2-2?
Yes. It's a tough road in the AFC and the AFC West.
Yeah, because the AFC is so loaded. Like, the division, I know it's like some, like, even though the Broncos seem to be disappointing and some of the AFC North teams, like the Browns with the whole suspension situation, may not live up. But I think it's clearly the better conference of the two, and there's going to be, you know, teams that maybe are 1 or 2 games over 500 that don't make the playoffs. And you only have so much wiggle room, especially when your division is so tough and they're also going against the NFC West this year, which is probably going to be a pretty good division. Yeah, the margin for error is slim. And so, like Josh McDaniels said tonight, they have to learn and also win at the same time. Like, they don't have a ton of wiggle room to go through kind of a figuring out process. It feels early to say must win, but the Titans kind of feels like a must win game going into next week.
Well, I think it's definitely a must win. I think it's a must win game for sure. You can't go into the games against the Broncos and Chiefs 0-3. I don't think that. Plus, again, I mentioned that the doubt thing would just start to grow because, like, again, we're getting way ahead of ourselves. This all doom and gloom stuff's better for, you know, next week or 2 weeks from now. But at some point, players are going to be like, hey, we were in the playoffs last year. We replaced our coaching staff. And now we're whatever we are, 0-3, 1-4.
Added the best receiver in football.
We added Devonta Adams. And
we suck.
Yeah, we're not doing very well. At some point, that's going to be an issue. But again, I mean, there's enough talent here where they can definitely beat the Titans, and they definitely can beat the Broncos. So there's definitely talent here to be 2-2.
I don't think they're down in the dumps on themselves right now, just because, I mean, depending on how you look at it. I mean, you know, they had a chance to go into that final drive with the Chargers. They could have theoretically won that game. They should have won, like, by this game. I think they should have lost Chargers game, but, like, they could convince themselves into, like, we should be 2-0 right now. Like, we're good enough. We're as good as we think we are, that kind of situation. So I don't think they're, like, you know, jumping ship yet. I don't think it's one of those situations. But if they lose to the Titans.
All right, let's try to send people out of here with a little bit of optimism. What are our reasons for optimism? I mean, the first half is – that was kind of exactly what you want to see out of this offense and this defense. I mean, the defense was really impressive. They were, you know, they were giving Kyler Murray trouble. They were getting after him. You know, and the offense was moving the ball. You know, they weren't completely lighting it up, but they were moving the ball efficiently. They were getting down 20 points in the half. It is very good. And, you know, it looked like on the first drive of the game, it looked like it was going to be one of those scary days again for the offensive line when we saw J.J. Watt just absolutely obliterate Jermaine Illuminor and get to Derek Carr. But after that, I mean, their whole innovative rotation of rotating the right tackle they were fine on the offensive line, I think. So that's a reason for optimism.
The rookie Dylan Parham played well at center. I thought he stepped in, and it's tough to ask a guy, a rookie, to come in and play center Week 2. He's been playing mostly guard at camp. But I thought he played well. I thought the line held up. The Cardinals don't have a great pass rush, but I thought the Giffen did what they had to do to give the Raiders a chance to win. So that's a positive, I think. I mean, hopefully they can build off that from next week, and maybe the coaches are right. Maybe this rotation will be good enough to not cost them. But today, clearly the offense just couldn't capitalize.
Yeah, the offensive line showed us it could be competent when, like, the other team doesn't have Khalil Mack and Joey Bosa, right? So, I mean,
there you go.
That's a positive.
That's a positive. Positive. Think about if they win this game, if, say, like, Renfrow doesn't fumble the ball and kick the field goal. We're talking about that Daron Harmon play. That was an incredible play. That was the play of the game. I mean, that was third and short or fourth and short, and it's a long fourth pass. It was a great fourth play down. Call. Yeah. And he had the Hollywood had the ball in his hands. It was going to be a catch. And Harmon came from nowhere and knocked it loose. So it was a big time play and kind of a game winning type play if they had kind of held on to win, but they did not.
And he made a great tackle on the speed option to play before that too. So Harmon looks like a guy, you know, and you get Morig back, yeah. And then you could do some things with those two.
Abram's been fine. Abram hasn't been an issue so far, I would say.
Yeah, the defense in general, I feel pretty good about their defense. The pass rush, you know, like, concerns are reasonable. But even with that, I mean, the secondary, like, as we just said, is making plays even without a couple of starters out there. You know, Devon Diablo had like 15 tackles tonight. I think Jayon Brown had 12. So the linebacker play was pretty good even without Denzel Perryman. Bilal Nichols did get banged up. He had a shoulder injury late in the second half and didn't come back. So we'll see on that moving forward. But yeah, the offensive line looked okay, and the defense looks like it can make you play enough plays to win a game, which I think I would say each of the last 2 weeks, the defense made enough plays to make both of those games winnable, which is, it sounds like a low bar, but I mean, for the Raiders defense, as bad as it's been for, like, since I've been like over 10 years old, right? Like, I mean, like, that's growth for them, you know? And so, you know, those are a couple of positives, and, you know, the sky isn't falling right now. Like, it could be next week if they lose, but there's enough positive to reasonably expect them to turn it around in the next 2 weeks and go into that matchup with the Chiefs at 500 and not feeling like they're in a situation where the season is lost already.
Yeah, I agree with you guys' points that, you know, the offensive line looks better than we thought, other than right tackle, but everybody's right tackle in the NFL suck. I mean, trust me, if you guys watch a lot of the film, man, everybody's right tackle sucks.
I'm telling y'all before the season, like, everybody hates their right tackle.
Yeah, but in a defense, they can make some plays. They can make some plays, and they're better. You know, so I think coming into the season, we weren't exactly sure what the defense would look like, but I think they're better than average, and they can make some game winning, make enough plays to win games. And I also think Derek Carr is going to continue to get better. I mean, you know, a lot of people are going to roll their eyes and think it's an excuse, but I do think Derek Carr is suffering some growing pains learning this offense. I think he will get better.
It's natural. I think definitely for Derek to have some growing pains, it is a new system. It is much different play call than John Gruden was. They're asking for different things. So even though he has this great receiving core, I think there's going to be some glitches. But ideally, you want to see, like, if you have a great first half and you want them, like, you know, they adjust, like Ted said, if they adjust and you adjust back, and you should be able to, with the weapons you have, you shouldn't have 3 points and a half. So I think growing pains is one thing, but you have to make some winning plays.
I do want to correct one thing I said earlier. I said that the Cardinals only had 3 possessions in the second half. I misread the box score, the stat sheet. They had 5. They had that 3-and-out to open the half, and then had that 11 play touchdown drive. So a lot of long drives for them, but the defense got tired out. But I mean, I think I'm still encouraged by the way they played in that first half. And I mean, I think they can be okay defensively, and we know the offenses should figure it out. If Carr and McDaniels can get a little bit more on the same page. It did seem like maybe kind of late there in that game that we saw Carr audibly in a little bit, that maybe McDaniels was giving him a little bit more freedom to do a few things. We saw him change a couple of plays, so maybe Josh will realize that he can't be quite as rigid with Derek as he could last season with Mac Jones, and just could tell that rookie, like, yeah, you're going to do whatever the hell I tell you to do.
Yeah, I don't think Derek lost his, like, check at the line of scrimmage privileges. You know, because he was kind of asked in that presser last, or I guess this week, you know, about, you know, distributing the ball and other people besides Devontae getting the ball, and You know, he was like on certain plays, you know, he knows where he's going. Like we saw the touchdown of Devontae. He, as soon as the ball was snapped, he was looking there the entire way. He knew I'm throwing the ball here no matter what. But there's other situations where he's able to, you know, go through his progressions and make decisions and audible and things of that nature. And so I don't think, you know, it's completely hands off for Derek Carr at this point, but it makes sense early in the season when you're in a new system, coming into a team that's been in and operating a certain way for a few years, to kind of just want them to do what you know and what you're best at, and help them get more comfortable in the system before you start allowing people to ad lib some more and kind of go off script. But, you know, I mean, going into this, I mean, this game against the Titans, like, it's kind of one of those, you know, you have to have this one. I think I've warmed up to saying that they need this game. And so as time progresses, whether they want to lose this one, I think we'll see Carr get more control over the offense and it'll be fine. But yeah, they have too much talent, I think, on offense for me to, you know, they had a shitty second half. I think it was our first cuss word this podcast, but they had a shitty second half, but I think they'll be all right on offense.
Took us 35 minutes, but Deshaun made sure we got the explicit sign on our podcast.
The thing is, it shouldn't be all right, though. I mean, with those three receivers, it should be a great offense. It's got to be a top five offense, or you've done something wrong in my mind. So the bar is getting a little too low. I mean, so I know we're supposed to be. It's tough being positive after that game. I mean,
after you blow a 20-point lead.
Yeah, I mean, that's why these things. If we talk tomorrow, I'll be more positive, but. That's a horrible loss.
Yeah, we don't have to be positive. I mean, fuck that shit, right? Cardinals, I mean, like, you know, this was embarrassing. Like, it was terrible. Dude, I mean,
Cardinals looking at the menu for the flight option menu for food. They're like, what's for dinner, man? Let's get the hell out of here.
Yeah, Kyler Murray is about to get ready to play Call of Duty. He was done.
I mean, he wasn't running at all the first half. First half, I'm not running. You crazy?
Did you guys see the Cliff Kingsbury quote? Said, usually I've just lost and I'm super hungover on Sundays in Vegas, so this was a good change up. All right, guys. Well, that'll wrap up this episode of State of the Nation. We'll be back later this week to get you ready for that must-win Week 3 game in Tennessee. We got to get Vic and Deshaun set up at my distillery. We got to get you guys some Bellmead bourbon next week. It's a 9-minute drive from the stadium to the distillery, so we'll have to get you guys taken care of post game. And hey, the last time we drank Bellmead during a podcast, it was a pretty epic win. But all right, guys, we will talk to you again later this week.
All right, later, guys.
Adios.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.